Hello and welcome to Better Living with Sporting Ethos. In this podcast, we talk about everything related to your health, fitness and performance. I'm your host, Rishabh Jaiswal, and I'm the High Performance Director at Sporting Ethos. In this episode, we are going to be talking about the need for sleep, and I'm joined by a head of sport and clinical nutritionist, Rukshira Rathore. And with World Sleep Day coming in on 15th of March, I think it's a very, very important topic, which we want to talk to you about. Some statistics which might be of interest to you here, is that 50% of the Indian population is sleep deprived. This is a study which was conducted in the Indian Journal of Sleep Medicine in 2019, which is titled Study of Incidence of Chronic Sleep Deprivation in Indian Population with Special Emphasis on Neuropsychology Testing. So, and some other stats, 55% of the population sleeps less than 6 hours. 60% of the Indian workforce feels lazy because of lack of sleep at work. 1/3 of the population has reported incidence of insomnia. 59% of the population goes to bed later than 11 p.m. And 36% of these people blame their gadgets for this particular behavior. Also, the youth seem to be more aware. They have a greater awareness about the benefits of good sleep, but the practice is not in proportion to the awareness. So, Rukshira, what is the need for sleep? We've heard about need for speed. What is the need for sleep?
So, I think we all know why sleep is important. We've been hearing about this ever since we've been growing up. You know, as kids, our parents always promoted good sleep hygiene. Everybody was promoted to have a decent bedtime schedule, a time where they could stop doing whatever enjoyment activities they were doing and just go to bed. And I think as we get older, those processes have somewhere gotten lost for most of us as adults. So sleep is one of those only behaviors that can dictate a lot of things within your body, be it related to your digestion, the way your brain functions, your hormones, your mood, energy, everything. So if we go a little bit deeper into sleep, I think it's a pretty loaded, you know, physiological mechanism. And it's actually quite interesting the way your brain and body adapts and changes during the course of when you sleep. Now, for a typical person, it's generally recommended that they sleep between 6 to 8 hours, which can change depending on how physically active you are, whether you're unwell, whether you're a professional athlete, or let's say a pregnant woman. The guidelines are going to change, but it's a general consensus that getting between 6 to 8 hours of sleep is very important. And one of the biggest reasons for that is because sleep typically dictates your entire circadian rhythm in combination with a lot of other factors like your light viewing behavior, exercise, food intake, caffeine intake, etc. And what I mean by circadian rhythm is that a lot of people, in fact, most of us have this biological clock inside our body that tells us when it's time to be awake and when it's time to rest and be sleepy.
Right.
And there are a lot of biochemical mechanisms that depend on this internal clock to guide them into releasing certain hormones and releasing certain neurotransmitters and, for the lack of a better word, certain chemicals.
Right.
That can then later lead to certain reactions that have profound effects on our body. So just for an example, we've all heard of the hormone cortisol, right? It's a stress hormone, and it's pretty much in media all day these days because a lot of people want to lower down their cortisol levels for XYZ reasons. And it's actually been found that one of the biggest reasons why somebody tends to get the feeling of wakefulness is because cortisol is supposed to rise in your body at a certain hour in the mornings, and that promotes wakefulness. Now, if there's a lot of fluctuation in your sleep timings or the routine that you follow, it can sometimes affect the way these hormones are released. And that can then have a ripple effect, a negative ripple effect on a lot of other factors that are supposed to be important for us. So yeah, I mean, that's just one of the examples of how sleep is something that plays a very small part of our overall well-being, but it can have a profound effect on our health.
Right. So while we are talking about sleep, let's take a breather here for 30 seconds. And let me talk to you about our recently launched Corporate Wellness 2.0 program, where we bring elite athlete methods to the corporate workplace. We have a specially designed CXO program. We have a program for women at work and a general program for employees who can improve their quality of health, fitness, and their performance. So we'll be delving deeper into each of these programs in a future podcast. And in the meantime, if this is of interest to you or your organization, you can get in touch with us and we'll get you started.
Talking about hormones, I think we work with a variety of clients at Sporting Ethos. We've got young kids. Some of them are into sports. We've got professional athletes, corporates. When you talk about these hormones, I would guess that some of them are related to growth, some of them are related to restoration. So if someone is working on their fitness or their exercise, how important is sleep for them in that context? And also when you talk about younger population, right, especially in terms of growth hormone, what would be positive effects of good hours of sleep for a young child or even someone who's, you know, pre-adolescent?
Right. So to answer your first question, if somebody is very physically active, I think it's a good strategy to focus on sleep because, like I said, if your sleep is out of whack, it's going to throw your hormones off balance. And that is typically going to have an effect on the way you crave food, how hungry you feel, how easily satiated you feel, what are your behaviors when it comes to feeling motivated around exercise, and so on and so forth. It's going to have a ripple effect. Now, typically, you've got different stages of sleep. There are ideally four stages that a person tends to cycle through whenever they sleep. So, for example, if somebody is sleeping for around 6 to 8 hours, they would typically go through these four sleep stages multiple times, ideally 4 to 5 times in the course of the night. And all these different stages of sleep that I'll get into in a little bit, they have an impact on the different mechanisms that are happening inside the body. So for example, the first stage of sleep is generally referred to as light sleep, and it's one of the first NRM sleeps, which we also refer to as non-rapid eye movement sleep. And this particular stage, this is usually the first step to falling asleep. Your heartbeat is going to slow down, your breathing is going to get easier, your muscles are going to relax, they're going to start relaxing. And this is usually an indication that you're about to fall asleep. And then as you cross the stage, you move on to stage 2, which is what we refer to as light sleep. It is the second type of NRM sleep. And in this particular stage, your heartbeat and breathing is going to slow down further. And your eyes are not going to start. They're just going to stop moving. Any type of movement is going to be stopped. And your body temperature is going to start dropping. And then subsequently, you would move to stage 3, which is what we refer to as slow wave sleep or deep sleep. This is of the utmost importance to us, especially if we are very physically active, because this tends to be the most restorative stage of sleep. And oftentimes nowadays, you know, we've got these tracking apps and softwares that can tell us how much percentage of our time we are spending in deep sleep at night and things like that. Now, why this is so important is because in this particular stage, our body is in its most relaxed form. And this is the time when your muscles and your brain has the ability to compartmentalize, restore, regenerate, whatever needs to repairing. And this is going to affect your recovery for the next day. And if you're not well recovered, you're not going to be able to put in the same kind of physical effort. And therefore, your results in terms of your fitness and performance, be it both physical, emotional, intellectual, is going to suffer. And then lastly, we've got a REM stage, which is the rapid eye movement stage. And this is primarily the stage where, interestingly, most of us tend to dream, and it's considered the last stage of the sleep cycle. And during this time, there are other, you know, things that the body and the brain goes through, and they can have a different impact. And mostly your limb muscles, they become temporarily paralyzed during this stage. And you tend to be in some sort of a, you know, some sort of a, for the lack of a better word, sleep paralysis in a way. And as you keep cycling through these different stages, the quality of your sleep is going to change depending on your bedtime hygiene, and that can therefore have an impact on your physical fitness and performance. Coming to your second question, talking about younger kids and adolescents, the general guideline is to allow your children to sleep as much as they deem fit, because every child's physical output is going to be very different, and therefore the amount of sleep they need might vary. Generally speaking, children and prepubescent as well as pubescent adolescents, they tend to require more hours of good quality sleep as compared to adults. So it's a good idea to let them wake up naturally whenever possible.
Right. I mean, I can see examples, certain instances where our trainers have sent our athletes back home and they have not slept properly. And I think one of the reasons for that, obviously, is that if they have not recovered properly, it's an important marker for recovery. It could even lead to lack of concentration, focus, attention, and could probably lead to injuries as well. So when you're going to the gym, it's important that you wake up early and you finish it off and go to work. But at the same time, if you've not slept enough, it might not be as productive as you might think of it to be. So when we work with athletes and when we work with the people who are recreationally active or even corporates, it's important to be highly energized, motivated, work long hours, because that's related to your success. But always at the base of the pyramid, we are keeping your health, your recovery at the utmost importance, because they are the main foundation for you to take go to the next level or achieve high performance. And Sleep, Rukshara, I think is a highly underrated form of recovery. These days, we have a lot of equipment and we also use things like ice bath and sports massage and deep tissue massage. There are recovery sleeves and they're all active recovery methods, but I think there's no replacement for a good quality sleep, which brings me to the next question. Is there a replacement to the nighttime sleep? A lot of individuals say that, okay, I can sleep for 4 hours at night and I can nap for another 2 hours in the afternoon or at any other time of the day. I'm getting my 6-7 hours of sleep. So is it the same as having straight up 6 to 8 hours of sleep at night?
That's an interesting question because honestly, I mean, my answer would be that if you can get consistent 6 to 8 hours of sleep at night, that should be your first preference. Because there is no replacement for nighttime sleep. I mean, we have enough data to point out how lack of sleep can impact everything, be it your mental health, your physical health, emotional well-being, the way you tolerate stress, everything. So if you do have the opportunity to get consistent sleep at night, that should always be your first priority. In fact, interestingly, you know, if you were to ask me between sleep, exercise and diet, if there was one thing that somebody could work on changing, my answer would always be sleep. Because when your sleep is good, it puts everything else into perspective. Your eating becomes better because you're better able to understand your moods and cravings and hunger, etc. And you have more energy to get a workout in. You feel more motivated to push through the day. So definitely, I think getting nighttime sleep is of utmost importance. However, I do recognize that in certain populations, yeah, might not always be possible to sleep at night. For example, if you're a shift worker, and you know, by the way, I mean, shift work, it's difficult because it can have really negative consequences on your health. And honestly, I mean, thank you to all the shift workers because that's such an important job and some of us have to get it done. But in such scenarios, you got to do what you got to do. And in such cases, in fact, you would be better off making adjustments and using certain tools and, you know, sleep kits and things like that, that might help you get maximum benefit from whatever is possible for you at that moment. So the idea is not to aim for perfection. Of course, perfection is always great if that is something that you can achieve. But if for whatever XYZ reason, it's not under your control, then there are still tools that you can incorporate, certain things that you can be doing on a daily basis, which could significantly give you better quality sleep and therefore better quality life.
Absolutely. So I think that's the next topic which we are going to be talking about. Aspects related to your sleeping behavior and your sleep hygiene. But just before that, another population I wanted to ask you about, and since you work with many of them, both athletes and corporates, in terms of people who are traveling a lot, right? And they're traveling domestically and sometimes internationally also, they might have a lot of travel. How do you suggest they go about their sleep routines? Because you're also, as you said, that it sets the tone for your diet and for the rest of your work. So what are your key suggestions or strategies? And let's start with this particular audience first, and then we'll get into the tools and the behavior aspect.
Right. So the first thing would be to figure out what your natural circadian rhythm is, right? Most of us tend to have a set time when we start feeling sleepy at night. And most of us also tend to have a time where we feel wakeful in the morning. So the first step would be to figure out what that natural timing is for you. And if you feel like it's a little bit out of the ordinary, for example, if you tend to naturally be able to stay up till 1 a.m., then that's obviously not healthy in the long term. And therefore, the first step has to be resetting your circadian rhythm in your home ground as much as possible within the healthy limit. Now, coming to travel, I think within the domestic range, it shouldn't be that much of a problem because in India, we don't have multiple time zones, although there is a little bit of difference in the way the sun rises and sets. But mostly, if you're able to carry your, you know, bedtime hygiene routines to other cities, it shouldn't be that much of a trouble for you. Carry eye masks if you will be traveling on public transport like planes and trains and things like that. Certain supplementation can be really helpful. And I'm not talking about melatonin here, which is something we can discuss later. But and there are certain behavioral things and technological things that you can incorporate. For example, sleep meditation can be a great, you know, tool for you if you are somebody who struggles with getting good quality sleep. And when we talk about traveling abroad, I think that's a slightly more loaded topic, and that can take a little bit more figuring out on your part. The first step would be figuring out what time zone you're traveling to. And then ideally, you know, when I work with my athletes, we like to start shifting their circadian rhythm before they even reach a particular country. So the change in schedule tends to happen 2 to 3 days before they leave, let's say, India for a country like US or UK, where the time zone difference might be greater than 4 or 5 hours. And certain changes in the way they eat their food, the way they view sunrises or sunset lighting, the way they time their exercise with their waking up hours and their sleeping hours, all of these things can help your body take new stimuli and set a new circadian rhythm, which is in sync with the type of time zone you're going to. So it's a little bit scientific. I'm sorry if it's sounding a little confusing, but that's basically what it is. Our body loves to use stimuli to understand what's happening in our environment, right? Exercise is stimuli for us. Food intake and digestion is stimuli for us. Stress is a type of negative or a positive stimuli for us. So being able to use these particular things and teach the body when to feel alert and focused, which is ideally daytime for you if you're not a shift worker, or nighttime for you if you're a shift worker, versus using darkness, avoiding gadgets later at night, and other tools like taking sleep supplements towards nighttime can be great strategies to help reset your circadian rhythm.
Right. I think in addition to that, even I think if you're exercising late or playing sport late, closer to your sleep hours, I think that can also probably be a factor which might delay the onset of sleep.
Yes, absolutely. In some cases, that could be the cause.
Right. So on a lighter note, you know, I was with a couple of our corporate partners a couple of weeks back, and I was telling them, now when I travel to different places, I find it really difficult to sleep because of the bed and the pillow. And they told me that that's a typical sign of me getting old. But I think what you touched upon, sleep meditation, I think meditation essentially, probably breaking it down, it would be mostly breathing techniques. And there are multiple ones out there, and a lot of psychologists and sleep psychologists, so they also use it. And I think that's a wonderful tool where, you know, you can have a progressive muscle relaxation and irrespective of the environment you are
in. Absolutely. I would like to add more on that. There are different types of meditative tools that are available. Some tend to be more focused on building alertness, and some tend to be focused more on relaxation.
Right.
So it's honestly very important to figure out what those tools are that work for you, because if you do the right kind of meditation, it could very well put you to sleep, or you could be staying up all night because suddenly you're feeling so alert and your brain is very focused. So it's really about figuring out what those strategies are for you, and they tend to be different for different.
Yeah, what's the sensory perception that suits you the most?
Absolutely.
Like, an audio perception would be better than a visual, but it could differ from person to person.
Yes, absolutely.
Right, great. So now let's talk a little bit more. I think you covered a few tools about and factors about the hygiene, including using gadgets, setting the gadgets away before your nap time. What are some of the other aspects? I think yesterday in our launch event for our corporate wellness 2.0 event, you mentioned something about body temperature. So how does that play a role? Because in India, typically we feel 24, 25, 26 degrees is a comfortable temperature for us to sleep, as opposed to research, which probably says it's around 18, 19 degrees and probably even cooler temperatures for elite athletes. So if you can touch upon that a little bit.
This is probably one of my favorite things to talk about when it comes to sleep, because I think the human biology is just so beautiful like that. So typically what happens is when our body falls asleep, there is a drop in temperature. That's essentially what starts the mechanism of falling asleep. And this particular drop in temperature signals like a cascade, a lot of other things that then so on and so forth have a domino effect. And when we feel wakeful, it's usually because that's our body's natural time to rise the temperature by a couple of degrees. It's not very significant, probably 2 or 3 degrees for people. And this is another tip that we use for athletes. It is figuring out that increase in temperature in the morning to help them understand what their natural wakefulness, you know, timing tends to be. So this drop in temperature is really important for us for various reasons. And when we are sleeping in the wrong kind of environments, you know, usually in the summers, we're sleeping under the fan and we're not using air conditioners. A lot of people struggle to fall asleep who might not have access to a colder, more ambient kind of comfortable sleeping environment. Whereas if you think about the winters, most of us love sleeping in the winters. Why do you think that is? That's usually because it's a lot more easier for our body to drop the temperature, and it's a lot more difficult for us to raise that temperature. Although it does happen naturally, it's not like your body has to put in too much effort into this. It's just that it's not ideal. So that tends to be one of the reasons why we love sleeping in the winters versus the summers, where we can struggle with sleep slightly and it's a lot more easier for us to get up. Now, when it comes to using certain tools and tricks and hacks to, you know, kind of hack your sleep quality, one of my favorite tips is manipulating the way you see light to figure out when you want to feel alert and awake versus when you want to feel sleepy. Now, what I mean by that is when you wake up in the morning, which should ideally be before 8 a.m., hopefully, that is the time you're waking up. Within the first 30 to 60 minutes of waking up, you want to go out and get some bright light exposure. Now, if you're in a place that gets sunlight, that's brilliant. 15 minutes should be good for you. Definitely don't look directly at the sun. Don't do anything that can damage your retinas. But you should comfortably be facing the sun without any sunglasses. Normal, you know, vision glasses and lenses should be all right. And this is going to signal to the body that there's a lot of light coming into our retinas. And our eyes are basically, you know, one of the only parts of the brain that are actually present externally. So they tend to grasp that as a stimuli and signal to the brain that it's daytime and it's time to be alert and wakeful. And that's then going to have an impact on your mood, your energy, you're going to feel focused, etc. So ideally, that is one of the first things you want to get done. The second thing that I want to talk about is the way you shut out light when you want to fall asleep. Now, what I mean by that is most of us nowadays have a habit of using our gadgets, you know, at bedtime. Most of us are scrolling on YouTube shorts and reels and stuff like that at night. And that typically tends to be the behavior. And we just put it next to our pillow or our bedside table and we fall asleep.
Right.
Now, that can be damaging for your sleep cycle in a lot of ways. Firstly, a lot of people have this misconception that it's only the blue screen light that is causing disruption in your sleep, but it's actually not true. It's all kinds of bright light, no matter the color, whether it's blue, red, yellow, green, it really doesn't matter. If it's bright light, it is going to disrupt your body's circadian rhythm because it's going to confuse your system into believing that there is bright light exposure and therefore you need to feel wakeful and alert. So one of the first things you want to do is shut out all gadgets at least 60 minutes prior to your scheduled bedtime, which should be before 11 p.m. ideally. And then you also want to start incorporating certain practices. You could use sleep meditation tools. You could use supplementation, which we could get into later. You could also use journaling and those types of tactics that can help you dump your mind and your thoughts out and sleep peacefully at night. And yeah, I mean, these are some of the basic do's and don'ts for when it comes to building a good sleep hygiene.
Right. And I think not to mention the caffeine
intake,
I think
that's
especially
the elephant in the room.
Yeah, especially in the corporate culture in offices, coffee is your go-to when you are feeling tired or when you need a break. It's usually a coffee break. But a lot of us do not realize that how impactful could it be in a negative way on your sleep. In fact, I met a friend of mine a couple of months back and he started a new company. And he was telling me that he's finding it really difficult to fall asleep for the last 10, 15 days. And, you know, it was a fluke, but all of a sudden I asked him, have you been consuming a lot of caffeine lately? And he's like, yeah, my office has just kind of established a new vending machine over there. They've just installed it. And he's been having a lot of coffee late till the evening. Good thing was when he actually corrected that habit, he was able to sleep. And obviously there are a lot of other factors. This is one anecdotal evidence. But if you can probably break it down just a little bit for the next 1 minute in terms of how caffeine consumption and sleep have correlated.
So, I'm personally a coffee drinker and I love my caffeine. But when it comes to caffeine, you know, it's really about the dosage and the timing at which you're taking it. Most of us now have gotten into the habit of waking up and craving that cup of coffee as soon as we get out of our beds. And that, I think, is having a lot of negative effects on sleep. Now, when it comes to caffeine, you know, the tolerance can be very bio-individual, meaning it can vary from person to person how their systems react to caffeine. A lot of us are very sensitive to caffeine, so much so that it can make us jittery, give us anxiety. Whereas there are a certain segment of the population where they might not have the same type of effects. And some people even claim that they can sleep very easily and peacefully even after having a strong cup of coffee. Now, that truly depends on your genetics. But one thing I would like to clear out here is that no matter how well adjusted you think you are to caffeine, it is playing a role on your sleep quality. Even if you consider yourself to be one of those people who can sleep late at night even after having a strong cup of coffee, it is going to have an impact on those stages of sleep that I had spoken about before, where the percentage or the quality of them is going to drop and therefore it's going to have negative consequences. Now, when it comes to caffeine, the number one thing you want to keep in mind is you want to delay your caffeine intake as much as possible after waking up. The general guideline from the scientific community tends to be around 60 to 90 minutes after waking up. Now, this is going to do a couple of things. Number one, it's going to allow your body to naturally signal that wakefulness and you would not crave the caffeine as a wakefulness start. Number two, when you consume caffeine very early in the day, you also tend to experience a crash after the half-life. And when that crash happens, that's when you feel that afternoon slump. You know, most of us tend to experience it around noon or 1 p.m. where we feel suddenly very tired and sleepy. So delaying your caffeine intake is actually going to help you feel alert, focused and energized during periods of work where you would want to ideally feel that. And another thing that's very important to note is that the cutoff time for caffeine is very important. Yeah. Ideally, for most people, you must stop your caffeine intake 8 to 10 hours before your bedtime. So that usually tends to be between 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. for most people. Yeah, if you just follow these simple 2-3 hacks and you drink your coffee in a responsible way and you're also not trying to fill in too many cups a day, I think you should be fine.
Yeah, so incidentally, I have one of the apps I'm using right now and its product is a ring. And there are many, gadgets in the market.
Yeah.
And right now it tells me at this time, it's 5:13 past 5 in the evening. And it's just 4:40 was my cutoff to have any kind of caffeine. So, it's pretty informative that way.
Right.
And, obviously, I think probably we'll have to leave the discussion of details of technology and gadgets to another podcast. But just quickly, I wanted to share. And, there are a lot of smartwatches these days and there were rings, and rings are supposed to be better at sleep tracking, and that's what research had suggested. There was Aura, which was launched in the US around a decade back, and now in India there are a lot of players, and I'm trying out one of them, which I'll review probably in the next podcast. But some very interesting markers, Rukshala, and what you spoke about, and that could probably be correlating to some of these things. So it gives me my sleep efficiency, that if I've been in my bed for 8 hours, how much is the actual time I've slept or been awake. That's a very simple stat with a lot of apps give. Temperature, your restfulness, your consistency of your sleep, your total sleep. How quickly did your heart rate drop? What was the timing? What was the restoration time?
And, quite detailed.
Yeah, and what I have noticed, it's a good, pretty good correlation. Like if I do an indoor walk for 15, 20 minutes because I need to complete certain number of steps, I've set my meter at night, even though I'm not looking at my phone, or if I've had some kind of caffeine consumption later in the evening, it does show that my HR drop and my time to fall asleep is actually delayed, and then my sleep score is actually ends up being less. So it's a nice feedback tool. Of course, it's work in progress when all these gadgets are concerned. But some kind of objective data, especially people who enjoy a little bit of objective feedback,
quantitative,
to improve their habits. I think these tools can be useful. But at the same time, I think there is a subjective element to it.
Absolutely, as is with most cases.
Exactly. So if we have to just probably, I think we are almost half an hour into the podcast, and I think we decided we'll keep this one short. So we'll leave the sleep tracking and the gadgets for later. But if you have to summarize, and if you have to give a message now to, let's say, three different segments of people, let's talk about athletes, let's talk about people in the corporate world, and let's talk about young kids. Mm-hmm. I think let's look at these three audiences. Mm-hmm. What would be 2 pointers each, or common pointers, which you would give to them so that they understand the importance of sleep and start practicing 1 or 2 things right away after listening to this podcast?
Right. So, honestly, the human biology is the same, right? Whether you're a kid, whether you're an athlete, whether you're somebody working a desk job in the corporate. So the basic guidelines tend to remain the same, but what you can get as a takeaway from those effects can be very individual for you. So, for example, for kids, sleep is going to be important for their cognition, memory, learning, just structurally for their brain and their growth and development. That's going to be important for them. For athletes, it could translate into better performance, better decision making, reaction time, things like that. And for the corporate, for corporate employees and people going to the 9-to-5 work, it could translate into better interpersonal and intersocial relationships, better overall health. Improvements in their eating, which could dictate how their body changes, whether it's weight loss, gaining muscle, losing fat, things like that, which could have a beneficial impact on their health long term. So, but the guidelines remain the same for all three populations at large. And some of those tend to be, you ideally want to get 6 to 8 hours of sleep, especially if you're an athlete or a child, you might do better with slightly more, even reaching up to 9-10 hours on some nights. It's also going to be important, the environment that you choose for sleeping. I think that's very important. A cold, dark room is the best with no gadgets and no, noises and things like that. You also want to look a little bit into what you're eating before you sleep. I know that is not something we couldn't touch upon in this particular podcast. But just ensuring that you're eating your carbs at least 2 hours before sleep, that's going to be really crucial. If you do struggle with sleep, you might do better with restricting your caffeine intake before 4 p.m., 3 p.m.
So now to summarize the podcast, Rukshala, what would be the closing top 3 tips you would give to our audience in terms of their sleep habits?
So the first tip would be regarding viewing light and installing dark wherever possible, depending on whatever sleep schedule you want to choose. So making sure that you get your 15-20 minutes of morning sunlight, ideally before 9 a.m., would be a great place to start, and then keeping your gadgets away an hour before you want to sleep. So the second tip I would like to give would be having a wind down routine wherein you have a certain schedule around your bedtime that you're able to follow on a daily basis so that it can prepare both your body and mind that it's time to go to bed. And the third tip I would give would be regarding your caffeine behaviors. So make sure that you try to delay your caffeine intake later into the day as much as possible, and you don't consume a lot of coffee after 2 to 4 p.m. I think those would be my three big tips.
Great. So I completely agree with you. These three tips would be the most useful. And I think I'm in complete agreement when you say that if you plan your sleep schedule and you make it consistent, I think it's going to sort out a lot of things for the rest of your day.
Thank you so much for those insightful inputs, Rukshara. At Sporting Ethos, we are always talking about your recovery, your sleep, your health, fitness, and performance. So whether you are an athlete or you work in a corporate setting or you're someone who wants to improve your health and performance, just contact us at Sporting Ethos. Our experts will do a detailed profiling and get you started and become a better version of yourself.